Dan Mahoney is running for mayor, and he's in the house here today. Thanks for coming out, Dan.
Good morning, Greg. How are you today?
Good, good. Give us a little feel for your campaign, how things are going.
Well, you know, we are 12 days out and still have a ton of work to do. You know, my theory is I have to work all the way through the finish line, and that's what we plan to do. I think we've put a considerable amount of work in so far, and we're just looking to finish the race strong.
Are you knocking on a lot of doors?
Knocking a lot of doors, making a lot of phone calls, and just trying to be as visible as possible. You know, I mean, I'm already extremely involved in this community, so I don't have to, like, do a lot of additional work because I've already got a lot of work on the plate because I'm super involved in the community right now. But at this point, it's about making sure that I'm addressing the issues that people are most concerned about and talking about the ways that I look at addressing those issues if I should become the next mayor of Jackson.
What have you learned going through this process, Dan?
You know, the biggest thing that I have learned is that when it comes to something of this magnitude, you cannot get it done without a good team around you. And that's one thing I want to shout out my campaign team, the individuals that I've had around me and the advice that I've been given from all corners of this city. And talking to the people of this city is what I've most enjoyed, just getting to talk to people, getting to know people, and getting to hear their genuine concerns about what the future of Jackson looks like.
I'm going to generally just kind of ask you the same topics okay. that we discussed with Mr. Wilson, but let's say you are elected mayor. What's your mission?
Well, my mission is to, one, unite Jackson. That is the biggest mission I feel like is that's on the table. As the mayor, you should be looking to unite the ideas of the six city council people and meshing those ideas with the task that our city staff have, the city manager and everyone below him, and just be looking to be an advocate for making Jackson a better place, and that's what I'm looking to do. I think that we've got some very critical and serious issues going on right now coming out of COVID, what to do with the ARPA funds, if there's any left when the next mayor takes seat, how to address the most pressing issue that people that I've talked to are concerned about, which is the gun violence in the community and the violent crimes that we've seen. What are we going to do about getting the roads fixed? How does that tie into getting our lead service lines replaced so that way we can continue to have drinkable water, and you know, just being a good advocate for the concerns of the citizens of this city.
Is that the number one issue, crime?
You know, it is.
That
is
gun violence.
It is. That's the most talked about thing right now. Like, what is your plan to address the gun violence? And that is the number one thing that I hear from people is I'm really concerned about these young people out here. What are we going to do? And, you know, I think that.
Do you have a plan?
I do have a plan. I have some ideas that I think that we need to start looking at implementing, as well as some ideas that are already on the table that I highly support. The group violence intervention approach is something that I highly support. This is something that our chief of police researched since 2016, Greg, 2016. Previous city manager didn't see fit for the program to go through. Current city manager sees eye to eye, as well as a unanimous vote from city council to support this program, and we have the funding for it right now. This is a brand new approach, and it is one tool in the tool belt. It's not a soft approach on crime. It is a proactive approach to give our young people an opportunity to make a different choice in their lives and giving them the support that they need to make sure that they can actually be successful at making a different choice, not just telling them they need to change their lives and expecting that they can just figure it all out. You know, so I really like that group violence intervention program approach. I really like the idea of providing some additional summer jobs. I mean, Greg, the biggest thing that I can remember as a young person is working in the summer program, the summer youth program. I was extremely blessed because, like, most of the time I'll spend summers with my father working in landscaping. landscaping down in Atlanta, Georgia. The summers that I did spend here in Jackson as a teenager, I worked the entire summer. So all of my needs were able to be met. And I think that's the big thing is kids get to that, what I call the age of realization, where you realize you don't want the Kmart sliders no more and the holes in your jeans. And you want a hot meal and you want good food. And to be able to go to the basketball games and football games and have money in your pocket. And there's not enough opportunities out there for our young people, and our workforce needs it anyway. You know, so I think that we need to look at different ways we can support some youth employment programs and get some mentors around here that can help guide these young people to make different decisions. And then the ones who don't want to make better decisions, Greg, then our police force has to be equipped with the necessary tools that they need to do the job that they're tasked at doing, which is, of course, locking them up, solving the cases. Our prosecutors doing a good job of prosecuting cases. And I think that that is something that's like a natural thing that's happening around crime, right? But that's what's always happened. Find them, lock them up, put them in jail, and hope that they reform in jail, right? But I think we need to be burning the candle at both ends of the stick, and we need proactive and reactive measures to address that issue.
Have you talked to Chief Hitt about this intervention program, and why is he high on it?
You know, so I've talked to him several times about this in depth at a ward meeting recently. And so, like he said, this is a data-driven approach, okay? This is a data-driven approach. They have researched this program since, like I said, 2016. When they did that research, they actually had the individuals from John Jay College who created this program come to Jackson through a grant that they got from the Jackson Community Foundation. They came to Jackson. They looked at the data. The data shows that 0.5% of this city is who's responsible for committing these crimes. That breaks down to about maybe 150 to 200 people in this community that are committing the violent crimes. And the data shows, again, because I really like following the data shows that a program like this will work. It targets and identifies the individuals who are involved in these crimes, and it sends someone from the community who looks like them. This isn't sending social workers to a murder scene. That's insane. This is sending the proper resources to give these kids a different option and a different approach to say, hey, listen, we know what you're involved in. Here's some options for you. Here's the resources that you need to get out of the lifestyle that you're living. What are you going to do? Because if you don't, you're on the list and you will go to jail. It's that simple, you know, and that came directly from the chief. And I support our law enforcement and what they feel is best. I've spoke to the chief. I spoke to the deputy, and they both are in support of this.
You've, Dan, on the county commission, been in the middle of this pandemic issue. And the city has been, I guess, fairly proactive. Would you continue that mode or... How do you see it?
You know, it depends on in what areas you're talking about. I think when it comes to that pandemic, you have to be as proactive as you possibly can. You know, but I think it depends on in what particular issue you're talking about as far as being proactive.
Just generally keeping the public safe, I guess.
Well, yeah, I think that's a responsibility that you hold in that office, is to keep our community safe and keep them as safe as possible and limit the amount of exposure and the amount of spread that happens with COVID as much as possible in as many ways as you can possibly do it.
Well, let's talk about the water issue here. That's certainly one of the big issues. Share your thoughts. I know your opponent wants to freeze the water rates. Mm-hmm. And kind of go back. Where do you stand there?
You know,
people aren't certainly nobody's happy to
in an ideal
pay more
world,
for a water bill.
In an ideal world, it would be great if we could just snap our fingers and roll back those rates and freeze water rates, and that all sounds great, right? But the realistic thing is we have a serious issue going on with the lead service lines. Those lines have to be replaced. right now. Whether you see it as an unfunded mandate or not doesn't matter. It's been mandated, right? And they gave us a certain amount of time to come up with a plan on how we're going to replace those at a certain rate every year, right? So that increase is to help offset the cost of replacing those lead service lines. For those that don't know, the lead service lines is the line that connects your house to our water system to get you fresh drinking water. Now, I don't know about you, Greg, but I know that there's a little bit of contention around water in this state. There's a little thing that happened a few years back in a little city called Flint, Michigan. And the last thing anybody in this community wants to do is turn into a Flint, Michigan, right? So I think that we all have to realize the seriousness of replacing those lead service lines. Now, it may seem like a huge increase. It may sound really, really great to hear that somebody is saying they're going to just step in office and roll back those water rates. But our largest water user stepped out of the system, which was Consumers Energy. They're no longer a part of our system. That gap had to be filled. Then on top of that, the estimated cost to replace the 11,000 lead service lines in this community in Jackson is $120 million. That's not a lot. That's not a small amount of money. Even if we get money from the state or from the feds, I do not believe or have confidence that they're going to fully fund a $120 million project. Now, the nice thing about that does include repairs of the streets as well. So I think that our previous city manager, who I believe came up with that plan, and the city council at that time that created that plan and imposed these increases on water rates, their forethought on this was, let's kill two birds with one stone. Because when you think about it, to get to those lead service lines, you got to dig the roads up. Let's not fix the roads twice. Let's not fix a road and then come back and then dig it up and replace the lead service line, or the opposite. Replace the lead service line, and then later on have to come back and fix the road. So those curbs and gutters and roads have to be replaced, and the most economical thing is to look at doing them at the same time. You know, so while it sounds good to roll back water rates, one, that's something that all six city council members would have to agree with, and I don't think they will. Otherwise, they wouldn't have voted to move forward the way they did. And two, what are the ramifications of not looking at what we can do, not what's going to come down from the state or the Fed, what we can do to ensure that we continue to have safe, drinkable water in our water lines?
Yeah, talk about fixing the roads. I know that's one of your priorities.
It is. It is. And when it comes to fixing the roads, like I said, you have to look at that in combination with those lead service line replacements. You have to look at, what are the roads that need to be replaced the most? And right now, I think people are ready to start seeing the roads in their own community, the roads that they go home on, to start to be replaced. And I think that we're getting to that point. All of our major roads seem to have had a considerable amount of repair. I think there are still some major roads that need a lot of work. But I think people are ready to start seeing their own roads repaired. You know, there's roads that haven't been repaired in this community for, 20 or 30 years in different places. And people are ready to see their personal roads get fixed. But I think along with that comes the responsibility of understanding that government doesn't have an endless pot of money to just pour into the roads, and that at some point we have to be willing to kick in a little bit of money to help pay for those roads to be fixed, especially if we want them fixed faster than later. And, that's just the reality. And one thing that I promise to do as the next mayor is to be fully transparent about what we have to do as a community. And it's not always going to be the answer that people want to hear, or the bright and shiny. Sometimes there's going to be some unfortunate situations that we have to look at addressing in the best way possible.
So we touched on water. How about the city council? Is this a group you know most of these people? Can you work with them?
You know, I feel like I can work with anybody. You know, I've done the best job that I can working with the county commission, and you know, that's been a tough road for at least the last 2 years. I feel like we started off on a really good foot the first 5 years of me being elected as a county commissioner, and in the last 2 years we've hit quite a bit of turbulence. You know, but I feel like one thing about me is I'm a fair, honest, open individual. And I'm willing to come to the table to look at solutions that might not always be my idea. It may come from someone else. And I think that's the proper thing to do when you're looking at representing an entire community. It doesn't always have to be your way. So as far as city council, that's one thing I really appreciate about city council is they agree when they agree and they disagree respectfully, which is what I expect to happen. I think that all good government has respectful disagreements.
Did want you to share your thoughts on economic development as this administration leaves, pretty heavily involved in economic development. I think your opponent is more, let's let the private sector get in there, get their hands dirty with this.
Yeah, well,
share your thoughts.
You know, I think that if we left it up to the private sector, our downtown would look like it looked 10 or 15 years ago, still today. I think that it takes a equal balance of our city government and our local government to provide the economic tools that are at our disposal to make sure that we are presenting our areas that are available for economic development in a way that makes it attractive to individuals who want to make investments in our community, which is what you've seen downtown. That didn't happen by accident. That happened because there was a good understanding at city council of if we build it, they will come. You know, you have to have shovel ready sites. That's one thing that I've learned from the county as far as the county being able to attract business in different areas of our city, taking tours with the economic development group, the enterprise group around our entire county and looking at where we have shovel ready sites so we can bring in larger businesses that are provide better jobs and employment for people in our city and our county in general. And I think I'll take those same types of thoughts over to the city desk and try to continue that economic development and make sure that that is looked at in all corners of the city and not just that downtown area. I really think that we need to try to spread that development out into some more of the community so that way we can see the rest of the community be built up as well.
You share some final thoughts with the voters?
Absolutely. Voters, listeners, one, thank you for tuning in. Greg, thank you for having me. It is a pleasure to be here this morning. It is truly an honor and a privilege to even have made it this far. I want to thank individuals who did vote for me in the primary and encourage individuals who are considering and planning to vote in the general election to vote for me, Daniel Mahoney, to be the next mayor of Jackson. No matter what you do, make sure you show up and vote. I mean, you got to vote for who you feel like best represents your interest, who you feel like is going to be the best leader of this community. And at the end of the day, I really just want you to show up and vote. I want this to be a record-breaking election year for the city of Jackson mayoral race. And I want to see everybody at the polls Tuesday, November 2nd. We got 12 days to make a difference. And I just hope you show up and help make a difference.
Dan, thanks for coming out.
Thank you.
Good luck election day.
Thank you.
Dan Mahoney.